there. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly discussion on antidepressants and the issues surrounding them.
Hello, this is James. Welcome to Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly podcast discussing antidepressants and mental health. This week, we talk to Elaine. Elaine describes her experiences with antidepressant and stimulant drugs for her anxiety and OCD, how she approached withdrawing from her medications, and also how she feels about the way that psychiatry judged rather than helped her. Elaine, thank you so much for talking with me today. I wanted to start really by asking how you first came into contact with psychiatric drugs.
Well, I think I've always struggled with anxiety. I can remember, you know, anxiety in high school and in junior high, and what people call obsessive compulsive disorder. I've had those kind of issues since junior high, I can remember, but they didn't really get to a debilitating point until my first year in college or my first semester in college. They're basically thoughts of harm, you know, that I'm going to do something harmful. And that tormented me more in high school. And then I had this thought that I'm going to blurt out something very offensive. And so it got to the point, well, first I was afraid to go to class, and then I was afraid to go, you know, to the dining commons. And I mean, until I got to the point where I was afraid to leave the dorm, afraid to leave my dorm room. And I was completely debilitated with this fear that I'm going to do something harmful. So anyway, so then I took a semester off of college and I got on Prozac. And I actually think the Prozac helped at first. But it's, you know, it's hard to untangle all the variables because, you know, I was in a new setting. You know, I was in I didn't have any responsibilities. I didn't have the responsibility of being a student. There's nothing being demanded of me, really. So, but it might have helped at first. I mean, I think it probably numbed me. It gave me a little bit of slight sedating effect. So, you know, so I got on that. Then I kind of was doing okay for a while. And then I thought, oh, I'm fine. I don't need this drug anymore. I'm fine. And just cold turkey. One, I didn't want to pay for it because I was a college student and I didn't want to wait for the insurance to reimburse me. And I just didn't want to take it anymore. So I just stopped taking it.
And Elaine, how long had you been taking Prozac when you decided to stop?
I think it was 1 year. I think it was about a year later. And then, of course, that was a bad idea because the anxiety came right back, and it happened to also be during exams. So I got back on the Prozac, and I thought to myself, you know, and I kind of got back on my feet, and I thought, oh, God, you know, don't do that again. That was stupid, and maybe there is something wrong with my brain, and I need to take this drug for the rest of my life. And, you know, gosh, I better never go off of this drug because I'm just going to go down that hole again. But anyway, so I kept on the drug until it just stopped working. And I was back in the same obsessive worry, just tormented by this thought that I'm going to blurt out an offensive word or do something harmful. So then I, you know, tried like a ton of different antidepressants, which none of them worked, and it was really an unpleasant experience going from one drug to another, and, you know, I just felt like I was jerking my brain around. But I finally got on Zoloft, and I think that helped, you know, for a while. But what I kind of think about these drugs is I kind of think of them like, you know, like herbicides or pesticides or fertilizers. You know, at first you might have some great yields, you know, great crop yields. But after a while, you've compromised the integrity of the soil and the ecosystem, and all the natural predators fly away, you know, natural insect predators fly away. And then if you withdraw the chemical input, you're stuck with an ecosystem that's out of balance. And instead of tending to the soil and the health of the ecosystem, you've just put in drugs. So anyway, so I stayed on Zoloft for a long time because I was afraid to go off. So, you know, I just assumed that I could not stop taking the drugs. I was afraid to stop. I thought maybe there really, in fact, was something wrong with my brain. And then I kind of just limped along. The symptoms seemed to come back, but I just kind of dealt with it. And, you know, it wasn't pleasant, but I was dealing with it and until my daughter was born. And it was difficult as it was because I had just moved to a small town in northern Minnesota. I didn't know anybody. I had no support from anyone. I had a daughter. I was a new mother. I didn't know anything about taking care of a baby. And, you know, it just collapsed.
That's understandable. You clearly had a lot of pressure on your shoulders and seemingly very little support at the time.
Yeah, we had just moved into this house. I hadn't even unpacked the boxes. I didn't even know where my regular non-maternity clothes were, you know, and it was difficult. And I you know, after that, you know, I tried one drug after another and you know, nothing seemed to work. And it seemed my condition was deteriorating. You know, it certainly wasn't getting any better. You know, I started to not like seeing the doctors. I started to feel like it was getting humiliating. I mean, I started to think of it as like a ritual humiliation, like to go to the clinic. It was because they call it the behavioral health clinic, which I don't like that term because it makes me sound like I'm misbehaving and they need to teach me how to behave myself. And I just didn't like going. So I was kind of like, man, I don't want to do this anymore. But I kept on doing it because I was afraid to get off. But anyway, what finally brought me to the realization that I never wanted to take a drug again in my life was the doctor that prescribes, or she's a nurse practitioner, she prescribes the drugs for me. She suggested that I go to a like a outpatient mental health clinic. And it's just you go during the day and then you go home at night anyway. And I went there and I just was there for one day. And it was... it was an awful experience. I was shocked. I mean, I couldn't believe how I was treated. I couldn't believe how humiliating it was. I couldn't believe how that doctor treated me. I mean, mostly it was the psychiatrist. And I was very angry. You know, I went home and I just stewed and I was extremely angry at the way I'd been treated. I went back the next day only because I was afraid the insurance would make me pay for it if I didn't, you know, get properly discharged. But I went in there and I said, I don't want to be here. I want out. And discharge me, please. This place is awful. I said it right to their faces. And so I'm kind of proud of myself for that. But anyway.
Well, it's feedback they clearly needed.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of like, I felt like it was like this, the cult of the psychiatrist there. And he was just this hugely egotistical person. And, you know, and he was standing behind a podium and everybody else was sitting at the table, the nurses and the social worker and the students. And, you know, and the nurses were okay. But I said, you know what, everything was going okay until I had to talk to that guy. And I pointed straight to the psychiatrist who was standing behind the podium. And he's like, me?
It does make you wonder, doesn't it, Elaine, why some people go into a profession that you assume to be a caring profession when that doesn't seem especially important to them?
Yeah, it was truly shocking because I felt like he was trying to humiliate me, it felt like, you know, whatever shred of self-respect I had left, like they were just going to shred my shred of self-respect. You know, like they were more interested in, you know, compliance and obedience and, I mean, I felt like I was meeting their needs. They weren't trying to meet mine. So, but anyway, I stewed over that experience and I was so mad. And so finally I did start researching these drugs. I had always been afraid to, you know, go to the internet because people would be like, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. But I finally got up the nerve and started doing research and it resonated with my own experience. And it was so true. What I was reading about the drugs, about my experience with the mental health system, I mean, personal accounts. I mean, there's just too much good evidence from good people for me to think, oh, it's just a bunch of crackpots with an axe to grind.
I agree, Elaine, and I found the same. I was very wary of the internet, but when you see how many people there are who have been through similar experiences and can describe what happened to them, you realize that we're not being given the facts on this.
Yeah, and that was my experience. All these stories that, I mean, from Facebook and from other, websites, Madden America, it just very much rings true with my own experience. And I, you know, reading that book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, was very eye-opening, and it just made sense to me. You know what? It was kind of interesting. I did get sidetracked because I'd always complained about fatigue. And so my doctor, the nurse practitioner, said, well, why don't you try this Vyvanse? And Vyvanse it's a stimulant. It's, and I think it's an amphetamine. It's like speed. That drug was, I loved it. It was great at first. I mean, who doesn't like speed? You know, I was getting things done. I felt like a great mother and a great wife and a great musician. My garden was flourishing. And I thought, this is the greatest thing. Now I know how other people can function in the world. Yeah. But I was on that. And then it kind of stopped working. I mean, after a while, it just, your brain adjusts, I guess. And so then I started feeling this dullness like I had never experienced before. I felt like my brain was like a ghost town. I mean, like, and I felt like my face probably looked like there was no expression, like a mask, like kind of look on my face. So I thought, I'm not going to go down this road of ever-increasing doses of Vyvanse. Keep on upping the dose when it starts to poop out. And I didn't want to go down that road. And I don't like how I've never had a psychiatrist or a doctor for more than 2 or 3 years. So every time I see a new one, you know, they have their different philosophies. I didn't want to be jerked around by people who didn't know me, especially with such a potent drug like Vyvanse or Xanax. It was another drug I've taken, yeah, which is the opposite of benzodiazepine. So finally I said, I am done with this and I am going to stop. And I just, that's when I started to stop, and I'm still on it. It's going to take me probably 2 years to get off of. Effexor is the one that I'm really struggling to get off of.
And Elaine, how are you approaching your withdrawal? For example, are you pill cutting or are you using a liquid?
Well, the nice thing about Effexor is it's a capsule, so I can open it and there's little balls inside, little beads. And I actually counted out the beads, and approximately each little ball is 1 milligram. And I was going a lot faster until I hit a wall. The withdrawal effects were just so horrible. I couldn't take it anymore. So now I'm down to doing the 10% per month. I take out 2 balls per month. So it's going to take me another year to get off of this drug.
And Elaine, how are you finding the process of withdrawing so far?
Well, at first it was okay. You know, it wasn't great. I had headaches and some nightmares. And I think it was giving me, you know, leg cramps. And you know, it was okay. I thought, well, I can do this, you know, and I was going, it was from 150 milligrams to about, or 37 and a half milligrams. It was okay. But when I started to dip in lower than that, it was terrible. I would wake up several times a night just in a complete panic. You know, I couldn't sleep and I had terrible nightmares, and I would wake up in the morning and just be so anxious. I mean, I was sick to my stomach with anxiety. I was just a wreck all morning. And then by the afternoon, I felt dead, just completely dead. And so I just, so I slowed down on the rate at which I was reducing the drug. And that has helped. I mean, that's now things are more manageable.
None of this process is easy, but to listen to your body and take it more slowly when you need to is an important message.
Yeah, there are strange sensations. Maybe you've experienced, just the brain saps and this shivering or humming. Or I kind of feel like someone's poured seltzer water on my brain, sort of like a sizzling. Those are some of the effects that I'm feeling now.
And Elaine, clearly you've still got some of the withdrawal to do. I wanted to ask how you see the remainder of the taper going for you.
Well, I think I've kind of got an idea of how it's going to go. Because when I first reduced by the 2 balls, I get headaches and I have extreme fatigue. And that lasts about 2 weeks. And then I start to, you know, feel better. So it seems like now I have a pretty good idea of how it's going to go. I do think after the 4 weeks, I've started to feel some more energy, and I've started to feel like maybe I'm connecting better with my daughter and my husband. And, you know, I think I'm getting glimpses of undrugged life.
Elaine, getting from 150 milligrams to 30 milligrams is a massive achievement, and you should certainly stand back and look at what you've achieved. That takes a lot of spirit and courage to do, so well done.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I know that my experience has been, that other people have had the same kind of experience where they go to their doctor, you know, because I went to my doctor, I was on 75 milligrams, and I said, okay, one off. And she said, okay, I'll give you 35 milligrams for a month, and then you're done. And I said, don't you think that's kind of fast? You know, I've been on these drugs for 25 years. And she said, no, you know. So, but luckily, I did my own research, and I knew that that would be way too fast. And I didn't, you know, stop abruptly after 1 month, but I know other people have and have suffered tremendously as a result.
It's so worrying, isn't it, when the medical professionals who we look to keep us from harm haven't got the knowledge or experience to know that people should approach psychiatric drug withdrawal with extreme caution.
Yeah, well, yeah, and she said, you know, yeah, it shouldn't take more than a month. And she said, and she showed me some book. And actually, I had such a blazing headache that day when I was talking to her. I don't remember the book, but it was some book in her office. She's like, see, it shouldn't take more than a month, and it'll only take 2 or 3 weeks of side effects, and you'll be fine. It's like, I don't care what the book says.
You're right. We're not academic studies. We're real human beings, and we react differently to things.
You know, sometimes it's like, I feel like they're like in an alternative universe, you know, with alternative facts. Well, you know, this is me. This is my body, you know. Don't look at the book. Listen to me. Or, I don't know, do some other research.
It really does make you feel worse, doesn't it? It's invalidating when a doctor doesn't take these issues seriously. And gradually you come to realize that the stories you've been mistrustful of on the internet are actually the truth.
I know. It turns everything topsy-turvy. She even said, oh, why don't you just, you know, treat it like taking off a bandage? You know, if you do it fast, then it doesn't hurt as much. So just, you know, get off the drug fast. She even said that to me.
If only that were true. But as we know, if people reduce some of these drugs too quickly, they can end up in hospital.
Yeah. You know, it is actually frightening. You know, you realize that, you know, my perspective, my reality can be so easily discredited and invalidated. Because, you know, if you go in, you say I'm, you know, or that you've been labeled mentally ill, then, you know, then they can assume that what I have to say is not valid because I have a disorder. And she even said one time that the reason why I was reluctant to go on, they always pressured me to go on antipsychotics. Nearly all the doctors I've seen always wanted me to go on antipsychotics. And I actually dodged a bullet with the antipsychotics because in college I did an internship at a state mental hospital, and there was a man there that had tardive dyskinesia. It was so heartbreaking. He was jerking all the time, jerking and twitching uncontrollably. And this image just seared itself into my brain. I will never forget. He was sitting at the piano. You know, apparently he had been able to play the piano at one point, and he couldn't play the piano because he was jerking and twitching. It was an image I'll never forget. And so I never went on the antipsychotics, even though I was given, it was tremendous pressure. There's tremendous pressure. They always want to. And then I felt like I should please them by taking these drugs so that, I don't know, but anyway, what she said to me was, well, the reason why you won't go on more drugs or you're reluctant to take a higher dose or get into the polypharmacy business is because you have an anxiety disorder and therefore you overinflate the risks associated with the drugs. And it's like, no, it's not. It's not that I have a disorder. I'm a rational human being that's using my critical thinking to decide that I don't want to take those drugs.
I agree. It's really distressing when medics try to use conditions that they've invented and applied to you as a reason for not being compliant with treatment, when actually the best person to look out for you is you. And Elaine, I just wanted to ask, if you had a friend or family member who perhaps was thinking of taking an antidepressant for the first time and asked for your advice, what would you say to them?
Well, I thought about this question, and I would advise against it. It's possible they might get some short-term relief, but after the drug kind of poops out, after you get that short, you trade this short-term relief for long-term vitality. So, and after the drug stops working, then what are your choices? You got four choices. You could either stop taking the drug, which is difficult, and you're probably not going to get a lot of support for it. I mean, you might not. You could increase the dose of the drug, which just kicks the problem down the road, and then you deal with more side effects. You could take a different drug, which is risky, and that still kind of just kicks the problem down the road. Or you could start into the polypharmacy business, take another drug on top of the drug, and I don't know how you could possibly untangle your mental or physical issues once you start going into the polypharmacy business. I mean, I feel like you're already kind of on the edge of scientific credibility when you take the first drug, and if you start taking two or three or four or five, you're just off the cliff.
You're right, and many people end up in a situation where they're taking drugs merely to ease the adverse effects of the previous medication.
Yeah, it's insane, I'm not the one who's crazy.
You're right. Who should be questioned in this? The patients or the people pushing unnecessary medications based on little scientific evidence? It's based on faith, not science.
Yeah, whose reality is the legitimate reality?
Elaine, I just wondered if there's anything else that you wanted to share with the listeners.
Well, I thought maybe I'd add a little story about a friend. Things are different in the UK, but in America, we have to worry about insurance covering things. I have a friend who, she lost her job and she lost her insurance. She got kicked out of her house. I mean, she got evicted. And so she came off of her drugs cold turkey in a homeless shelter. I mean, there's so many things wrong with this picture. I don't even know where to start. I mean, and I can't imagine it. She was on Effexor too, and she said she was having these out-of-body experiences. I mean, I can't even imagine the kind of situations people get in where they have to come off of the drugs cold turkey, and there's just nobody there to support or to help them, and they're in an even worse situation than if they'd never started on the drugs in the first place. So I thought I'd just kind of point that out as another problem with the drugs. I mean, people get, or the doctors get people on these drugs kind of assuming a economic stability or employment stability or even social policy stability in terms of your ability to access these drugs.
That's not something I'd previously considered, that people might be forced to withdraw for financial reasons. There are so many angles to consider about withdrawal, aren't there?
Not only when you're coming off of the drugs, not only is the physical withdrawal difficult, you also have to come to terms with kind of your grief about the lost years. I mean, for me, 25 years, I wonder how it's affected my daughter. My ability to bond with her. I think it's affected my creativity. I think I can clearly think of specific examples where, I felt like I had some opportunities, but I was so dead emotionally that and now looking back, I see that it was the drugs that made me so emotionally dead, but I wasn't able to take up some opportunities because of the drugs. And so you have to deal with not only with the withdrawal from the drug, but kind of the regret and the grief and sort of this anger about feeling used and abused and taken advantage of.
That's very true, Elaine. It's important to share these experiences because, as you said yourself earlier, it's difficult to get the truth from medical professionals for many reasons. So I'm so grateful to you for helping me raise awareness of the many issues that relate to taking psychiatric drugs.
Yeah, I hopefully all of this will change things and make things better for people. I think a lot of times, you know, the crisis is in early adulthood. There's a real crisis, you know, 17, 18, 19. And instead of being able to work through that crisis, you know, they're just so quickly put on drugs. You know, and that's how old I was, 19.
It's awful to medicalize distress in this way. And like you, I hope that we can help people out there to realize that it's the system that's broken, not us.
Yeah, and it probably mirrors what a lot of people with anxiety disorders or trauma issues have already experienced when they've tried to speak out about their position, you know, there's or what's happened to them, you know, they're denied or discredited.
Elaine, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. Well done on your taper so far, and I'm confident that you'll get to where you need to be. Thank you for supporting me with the podcast too.
Yeah, I find it extremely helpful to hear other people's stories. So thank you.
It was really interesting to talk with Elaine today and to hear about her own journey off the medications and also how she feels about her own treatment by psychiatry.
Feedback.
Thank you so much for getting in touch and giving me your feedback and comments. If you like the podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes just a couple of minutes, but it makes a big difference to how many people listen in. Thank you. Just to say also that if you're struggling with withdrawal yourself, you can visit my website, jfmoore.co.uk, where there are links to information you may find useful.
Please do not increase, decrease, or stop your psychoactive prescription medication without the advice and support of a medical or mental health professional.
Thank you so much for listening. Please come back next week for another episode. Until next time, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal. Come back next week for more news and views. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and subscribe in iTunes.